ora, I'm Sharon Brett Kelly. Today on The Detail...
I give notice that Boris Johnson is elected as the leader of the Conservative and Unionist Party.
Thank you so much.
Boris Johnson is Britain's new Prime Minister.
And I know that there will be people around the place who will question the wisdom of your decision. And there may even be some people here who still wonder what they have done.
Is he Donald Trump's mirror image?
To say he's like a failed clone of Donald Trump is perfect because it's an insult to both of them somehow.
Why don't his colleagues like him?
Many have objections to the personal character of Boris Johnson. They thought that he was quite weaselly when he was in cabinet, and they don't like the way that he conducts himself.
Scotland's First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, really doesn't like him.
But of course, I can't deny it. It would be hypocritical to deny the fact that I have profound concerns about the prospect of Boris Johnson as Prime Minister. You know, the vast majority of people in Scotland, had they been given any choice, which they weren't, wouldn't have chosen to hand the keys to number 10 to somebody with Boris Johnson's views and track record.
Can he do what he's promised when it comes to Brexit?
No one's going to be any worse off. No party in the deal that we're going to do is going to be worse off. We're going to get a great deal that works for everybody.
But he's running out of time. There are only 18 working days after Parliament's recess for him to deliver Brexit by the deadline of October the 31st.
It's literally physically impossible for him to pass the required legislation. So come what may, there's going to be at least some sort of technical delay.
And can he really unite Britain as he promised in his election campaign?
The problem that he really has is uniting the United Kingdom, because he is the most divisive politician in the United Kingdom.
James Murray has been live blogging the leadership contest for The Guardian, and he spoke to our producer Alexia Russell about the man who's compared himself to his hero, Winston Churchill.
He's an Eton man. He plays into that stereotype of British politicians, but he's also a little bit on the wild side as well. Tell me a little bit about him. Is he Trump or is he Churchill?
Well, that's a good question. Yeah. I mean, you know, I think he wears the hat that kind of works depending on what he's trying to achieve. So while he was London mayor, he was much more of a sort of One Nation Tory. And when he led the Leave campaign, he was sort of completely the opposite. Boris's sort of roguish persona is something that he kind of crafted for himself when he was at school. You know, he has Turkish heritage that he was teased for, and it was kind of something that he sort of, this kind of posh English bumbling kind of character was something that he created to protect himself from criticism. And you know, over his entire career, he's been, you know, given a lot of leeway because of that, you know, because of that personality. You know, the sort of mistakes he's made and the sort of dishonesty that, you know, he's accused of, he's in to some degree been able to ride past that because, yeah, I guess this is the sort of privileged persona and background that he had. You know, if a different politician, say Diane Abbott, had done half the things that Boris had, you know, her political career would be over. But for Boris, we expect that of him, and that's, you know, a lot because of the, you know, because of this character that he's created. Yeah.
And that's very Trump-like, isn't it? I mean, you talk about the mistakes he's made. Let's run through them. I mean, they range from being extremely offensive, racist, having an affair, being sacked for lying.
But what's his deal? Like, what's his deal? He known for?
Like entitlement from an early age, a kind of deep, deep, white, hot ambition pulsing through his life, no real principles to name of any kind.
Uh-huh.
A kind of cartoon.
And what about Boris Johnson? What's he like?
Just expand on, you know, his highlights or lowlights over the last few years.
Well, I mean, his reputation in Britain very much depends on your viewpoint on Brexit. But if you were someone who backed Remain, his entire campaign was, you know, is viewed incredibly negatively from the, you know, the £350 million pounds for the NHS on the side of a bus. I think a lot of people were very angry about the mistakes he made during his time as Foreign Secretary. You probably have heard of Nazanin Zahari Radcliffe, who, you know, is still detained in Iran, in partly because of things that he said while he was Foreign Secretary. earlier in his career. He was sort of involved in a plot to assault a journalist. He has written Islamophobic stuff in his Telegraph column. You know, I mean, those are just a few of the things. You know, when he was a reporter in Brussels, he sort of routinely sent stories that stretched the truth about sort of the more kind of officious things that Brussels might have been accused of, you know, bent bananas and so on.
How many directives do you think there are from the European Union on bananas? One of them says that there should not be abnormal curvature of the fingers of the on the bunches.
He has had his costs massively increased by Brussels bureaucrats who have insisted that each kipper must be accompanied by a plastic ice pillow.
And that might come back to bite him, mightn't it, now that he's trying to wriggle out of the UK with a better deal?
I mean, one issue he's going to have is that he is going to have to go to Europe and try to charm people and persuade people to at least give him some sort of concession that he can sell to Parliament. And whether that would be something genuine is a major concession is extremely unlikely. There's a chance he might get some sort of, you know, lipstick on a pig type deal, that he might be able to swing sort of Brexit supporting Labour MPs towards and some more people in his own party just to avoid a no deal situation. But, you know, what the problem he might have is that he has an incredibly low reputation with a lot of the people that he's going to have to sort of win over. So that might sort of scupper him.
Yeah. So what does his election mean for Brexit? Which direction will Britain go in now?
I think it's still very, very difficult to say. I mean, there's several scenarios that could play out, essentially. Brussels could offer some sort of slight concession. He could possibly scrape it through Parliament with the help of the Labour MPs, and then, you know, maybe he tried for a general election in the spring. But, I mean, that seems a highly unlikely scenario. It might be that, you know, the more moderate members of his own party join with the opposition to, call a vote of no confidence, and we get an extension with a general election just instead of no-deal Brexit occurring. I think the sort of suggestions that he might prorogue Parliament or suspend Parliament possibly won't happen because it would face such opposition from MPs. There's actually a by-election that the Tories could lose in August, which could be a flashpoint. It's in Brecon, up near Scotland, and that would reduce their majority to two, I think. And, you know, so if that was something they lost, that could be a point at which he lost the no-confidence vote from his own MPs. And another option, perhaps, is that he does leave the EU in October the 1st, but with some sort of rough extension that trading arrangements might continue as they are until some sort of Canada-style trade deal was struck further down the line. The problem you might have there, of course, is that he's been brought into power on the back of lots of very hardcore Brexit supporters, and that might not be enough for them.
Would his own MPs, though, pull the trigger on him and risk losing the government?
I think it's possible. I mean, the Tories are notorious for sort of threatening to do things like that and then remaining united just to stay in power. But given the sort of very slender majority that he's actually working with, it really only takes a handful of them to enact that. So there are, you know, in people like Dominic Grieve, Gawke and so on, there are some Tory MPs who are quite genuine in their opposition to it, who I do think would be able to command enough support with maybe, you know, it could be as few as 15 MPs needed to swing the balance.
So he could be yet another short-term British PM.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, if that happened, he's at risk of being the shortest serving PM of all time.
Another ignominy that you probably won't care about.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
What about internationally? Trump said
really good man is going to be the Prime Minister of the UK now, Boris Johnson. Good man. He's tough and he's smart. They're saying Britain Trump. They call him Britain Trump. And people are saying that's a good thing. That they like me over there. That's what they wanted. That's what they need. It's what they need. He'll get it done. Boris is good. He's going to do a good job.
I don't think there's anything hugely concrete for Boris Johnson in Trump's words of support.
Right, so they're not going to be best buds and rustle up a treaty real quick just because Trump likes him.
I don't think so. I think America will ask for a lot. I mean, part of the reason Trump supports Brexit is because he wants the EU to be broken up so he can negotiate with European countries individually over things like pharmaceuticals and other sort of things that America trades. And so Trump would want to drive a very, very hard bargain, and it might not be something that the UK Parliament would be able to, you know, to pallet.
Interesting, isn't it? Because Johnson has proved himself to be quite pro-Commonwealth when he's down in this part of the world. You know, he's best mates with Winston Peters. Peters thinks he's fabulous.
Well, first of all, he is not just a character. He's got character. There's a whole big difference between being the first against the second. The second red asset he's got is a thing called courage, and he's rather visionary. So I think he's a man for the times.
He's talked about helping New Zealanders overcome the visa restrictions.
We love Kiwis coming to our country, and it makes a huge difference to our economy that we have people of talent and ambition who want to come, and even if it's only for a short time, and then go back again. So on the ancestry visas and the overseas experience and stuff like that, no, we will want to maintain a regime that is at least as attractive as the current regime.
He does talk about Australians and New Zealanders coming into Britain. Is that a thing of the past, or can we expect some greater form of cooperation down this part of the world?
I mean, I'd hope so. I don't want Brexit to occur, but if Brexit did occur, it's one thing that I would hope might be a result of it. And as you say, Boris has previously sort of mooted the idea of freer movement for people from New Zealand, Australia, Canada and so on. Whether Australia would agree to that, I'm not sure. But there would certainly be some opportunities for New Zealand. I mean, obviously, New Zealand suffered when Britain entered the common market in the 70s, and I guess sort of New Zealand dairy and other produce might benefit in some manner. And you know, like Winston and Boris are kind of cut from the same cloth to some degree. Like, they're both sort of politicians who understand the power of a sort of political stunt, and they both have a very well-honed persona, and they've both sort of been around for a long time and managed to sort of stay in within touching distance of power. And of course, they're both people who very strongly believe in nation states rather than globalism. So there's obviously lots of commonality there. The thing that counts against it, of course, is that if Britain did, worse comes to worse, and it's a no deal Brexit, Britain will be in a state of turmoil for a while, presumably. And it's hard to say just how organised things will be and how quickly those sort of trade deals could happen.
If I can just make one thing absolutely clear, I say this when I'm blue in the face, Brexit was not, will not be about Britain turning away from the world. On the contrary, it is about us wanting to, of course, to keep great relations with our European friends and partners and to do a great free trade deal with them. But it is also about rediscovering and intensifying friendships and partnerships around the world. And in trying to do that, we see New Zealanders at or near the front of the queue.
Basically, his election has really not revealed no clear path. We're not any closer to seeing where Britain will be at the end of the year as far as the EU is concerned.
No, I mean, the EU has basically hinted how they think it will pan out, and that's with another referendum or a general election. Yes, no deal Brexit is a definite possibility. Parliament, vote against it. They don't want it to happen. Boris could lose power if he tries to pursue that route with the general election. So, while no deal is definitely something that could occur, because we just don't know how these sort of myriad things will play out. There's been so many surprises over the past sort of few years. But, I think it's equally possible that we'd have a general election. I think a second referendum is less possible, or might be something that happened after a general election, especially if Labour won that general election.
So even if there was a general election and another referendum was called, would the EU let Britain back down from its exit decision?
Well, that's a legal question. So essentially, Britain, in theory, can revoke Article 50 unilaterally. That's been argued in courts and decided that Britain could do that unilaterally.
That would, reverse the whole thing?
Yeah, I mean, that would basically go back to square one, but with a very battered reputation, obviously.
Yeah.
But in terms of the structure of how things work, it would be
the same.
But it could be a get-out-of-jail-free card.
Yes, but the other factor, of course, is that leaders like Macron are quite impatient and worried about Brexit dragging on because they're very worried about the makeup and the security of the European Union, and they think that the longer it goes on, the more likely it is to sort of destabilise the European Union. And to some degree, there's some sentiment within the EU that, you know, we've had our chance and we should just kind of like go and like experience no deal Brexit in all its beauty. And you know, so we are slightly dependent on Europe agreeing to us having an extension. Angela Merkel's obviously very pragmatic and would probably agree to putting back the pain as often as she could.
Sharon, Merkel might have some sympathy for Boris's plight, but may not be the same amongst Boris's constituents. You have British relatives. What's been their reaction?
Yeah, I do indeed. And I had an overnight email conversation with them. And as you can imagine, they're not happy. Well, I guess some people are happy, but they're not happy. They said to me, "We both loathe the man. It's an extraordinary situation, really, a two-party system in which few of either party's MPs have any faith in their leader. He's now our PM, FFS.
Oh my, it sounds like they are seeing a similarity to the Trump situation.
Well, they are, and I actually talked to my husband, who's also an Englishman, and he says the whole thing's a joke, that Boris Johnson has no history of ever achieving anything, and that 96,000 Brexiteering Tories have decided that he should do the job. He feels depressed. He feels worried. He says it's the US all over again.
Oh, no. And James Murray had an interesting spin on all the goonish things Boris has done in the past. You know, things such as the time he tackled a little kid in a fun game of rugby, or when he dangled stuck from a wire ahead of the London Olympics in 2012.
Can you get me a rope?
His generally shambolic appearances.
The question people have continually tried to answer about Boris Johnson is, are those things like inherently part of his character and just complete accidents and they just happen to him, or are they calculated, or is it somewhere in between the two? You know, he knows very well, I'm sure, the power of making himself seem fallible. Like, if you the Obamas always said, you know, we go high when they go low. And the problem if you do continually go high is that the expectations of people that they have of you is that you will always be beyond reproach. So the slightest thing that occurs, you know, if Jacinda Ardern breaks a fingernail, it's kind of bad news for her. Whereas if Boris Johnson writes a Telegraph column, you know, calling the dress of Islamic women, you know, letterboxes, it's kind of like, well, we expect that of him. And we're not surprised. And
it's a low bar.
It doesn't change his popularity because he was popular despite all that.
And we'll let Boris Johnson have the last word. This is from his victory speech.
I know some waggles already pointed out that deliver, unite and defeat was not the perfect acronym for an election campaign, since unfortunately it spells dud. But they forgot the final E, my friends. E for energise. And I say to all the doubters, dude, we are going to energise the country. We're going to get Brexit done on October the 31st. We're going to take advantage of all the opportunities that it will bring in a new spirit of can-do. And we are once again going to believe in ourselves and what we can achieve. And like some slumbering giant, we are going to rise and ping off the guy ropes of self-doubt and negativity with better education, better infrastructure, more police, fantastic full fibre broadband sprouting in every household. We are going to unite this amazing country and we are going to take it forward. I thank you all very much for the incredible honour that you have just done me. I will work flat out from now on with my team that I will build, I hope, in the next few days to repay your confidence. But in the meantime, the campaign is over and the work begins. Thank you all very much.
That's The Detail for today. I'm Sharon Brett-Kelly. The Detail is brought to you by newsroom.co.nz, made possible by the RNZ NZ On Air Innovation Fund. Hit the subscribe button to stay across The Detail every day. And if you're on Apple, please leave a rating as it helps other listeners find us. This episode was engineered by Rangi Poick and produced by Alexia Russell, and our associate producer is Kathike Misalamani. Ka kite anō.